You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome to First Friday on Smart Talk, a focus on arts and culture. I'm Scott Lamar. The 54th Art of the State exhibit is at the State Museum of Pennsylvania now through January 2nd. It's a broad and diverse multimedia representation of art from across the state. Art of the State is in person this year after being online only last year due to the coronavirus pandemic. Current events like the pandemic and racial reckoning of last year are the subjects of many of the pieces. Joining us is Art of the State curator Amy Hammond. Amy Hammond, welcome to the program. The 54th Art of the State, you know, the name is really a good description, but talk about Art of the State a little bit more. What is Art of the State?
Art of the State is about community, and this year we feature 104 works of art by 104 artists from 31 counties in Pennsylvania, and these artists are our neighbors, so it's been really fun to see visitors and artists interact with people from their hometowns, and we really enjoy having people back this year. It's been a joy to see everyone interacting with the art in person.
Now, you just mentioned in person, as I mentioned, it was virtual only last year. Do you have more participants this year with 104? How's that compare with previous years pre-pandemic?
Well, we weren't sure what our submissions would be like, but we actually had over 2,200 works of art submitted to the exhibition. And like every year, it is highly competitive. And our selection jurors take a look at that 2,200 works of art and selected the 104 that are in the exhibition. So in terms of what we have, it is about the size of exhibitions in the past. Mm.
With over 2,000 submissions, how do your jurors choose?
Well, we are very lucky to have very studious jurors, and they look at all the images that are entered into the site, and they also read the artist statements and the resumes. They look at the websites. They do their research, and it is a very difficult decision, and they spend well over a month making the decision. So it's difficult. I don't envy them their project.
Do they take geography into consideration? You mentioned 31 counties of Pennsylvania, diversity of place, diversity of different media of art. What do they take into consideration?
I don't think they do look at geography. I think that Pennsylvania has such a wealth of deeply rooted artistic talent that it just, every year we are able to feature so many artists from so many different counties because Pennsylvania just has a wealth of talent. And they're really looking at artistic merit. They're looking at images and they're researching the artists to see what they are working on, what are their projects and objectives. Mm.
So what types or medias of art are we talking about in the exhibit this year?
There is something for everyone. The artists enter into the categories of painting, photography, works on paper, sculpture, and craft. But every year, artists push the boundaries of what those categories are. So there is, there's just really something for everyone. We have a strong painting category this year. There's quite a few paintings in the exhibition.
When you say push the boundaries, what do you mean?
I think that a lot of artists, they don't consider themselves working within categories. They're multimedia artists, or they are working between two different categories. A sculpture and craft sometimes overlap quite a bit, or painting and works on paper overlap. So it can be hard to put yourself in one specific category when they're working so creatively.
Mm-hmm. Is there a theme this year?
We do not have a theme. We just ask artists to submit work that was created in the past 3 years. So it's always fresh and new. It's contemporary. And because we're asking artists to submit recent work, the body of work that's in Art of the State always is a time capsule of the themes, events, and experiences that the artist had over the past 3 years.
So with that said, you kind of anticipated my next question, that art and artists are inspired very often by their own lives or things they observe in their own lives, say in Pennsylvania, around the world, over the past 3 years, as you mentioned. Obviously, what has dominated the news over the past couple of years, the pandemic, racial and social justice, does the art reflect that?
Absolutely. It absolutely reflects that. Every year, artists address identity, environmental concerns, human experiences, and many are pursuing artistic and aesthetic explorations. But the themes that we've noticed this year are certainly, the racial tensions that you mentioned, identity has come up a lot. And the coronavirus pandemic was certainly addressed in some ways very directly by the artists.
In what ways? Can you give us some examples of how racial and social justice has been addressed in the art? It's the same with the pandemic.
Well, I will highlight two works of art that we selected as purchase awards to use as examples for that. The first one is called Particulate Protection. It's a reliquary for an N95 mask by an artist named Becky McDonough from Millersville. And she created a reliquary for a mask. And it's hard to think of another time in our culture's history where you would see masking and just know automatically what it referred to, you know, and she took this mask and elevated it, you know, in kind of a sense of, you know, you would imagine a religious reliquary, just to show how important that has been to our culture. And in terms of social justice, Shelby Wormley is a photographer from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, who submitted a really stunning photograph called I Am Somebody, and it's of an African-American boy with this enormous joyful smile on his face, and he's wearing a t-shirt that says I Am Somebody. And Shelby's work is really about celebrating her community, and we thought that we really wanted to accession that to the permanent collection as well, because it really symbolized the social justice that has occurred in the past few years.
Yeah, I have seen that that photograph, and you're right. You have an emotional response to it, because the young man has the t-shirt on and says, I am someone, has this huge smile on his face, and just kind of represents a lot from the past year and a half as well. Other than the two you mentioned, are there pieces that stand out, not necessarily better, because everyone has their different favorites, but some that have garnered a lot of attention from the people who have visited the exhibit?
Yes, there's always a few that people are drawn to, and it is impossible to pick a favorite. I can't do that. But I will say that we have a series of portraits that have masks in them, and I have seen people walk up to those and really look at them, because it is something that really symbolizes so much that happened in the past, you know, in the past few years for us. And there's also one called Pandemic Survival Kit that is by an artist named Robert Huckstein that has, it's a still life that contains masks and sanitizer and, you know, just the things that, if you looked at that 10 years ago, it would not have the same meaning as it does in 2021.
Sounds like there is a theme there with sounds like there's a lot of art with the mask this year.
The themes emerge. I don't know that the artwork was specifically chosen to match the theme, but because of our collective human experience, there are certain things that come to the surface.
You mentioned those text descriptions that the artists submit with their pieces. What those texts do is explain or describe the work and there's a lot of different meanings behind them. But how important is that to the judges, to the jurors, and to even the public when they see these pieces?
I think it's really important. I look very carefully at that kind of information. I'm the person that goes to a museum and reads every single label. I want to be able to learn as much as I can. And I'll use that as an opportunity to say that the Art of the State website has all of that information on it. So if anyone's interested in learning more, it's Art of the State or statemuseumofpa.org/Art of the State. And there's a section on there called Artist Statements and Resumes. And it has information about each work of art along with the statement that's submitted and the artist resume. So if you're interested in hearing how an artist describes their work or you know, the kind of things that they're working on, it's all there.
You know, one of the things I always find interesting about those, usually they're on cards. One of the things I find interesting is that when you read what the artist was going for or what their inspiration was, often it's not what I thought of. But I said, you always have one of those, aha, okay, now I see it. And so it's very helpful for us who are, you know, who are visiting the exhibit or viewing the art. So, you know, those are always very helpful. So you mentioned the website, Amy. When can visitors see Art of the State in person, see the exhibit?
The exhibit is open until January 2nd, so visitors have 1 month left to see it. And the museum is open Wednesday through Saturday from 9 to 5 and Sunday from 12 to 5. And we do have programming on our website. I've been doing a Learn at Lunch series on the first Friday of every month. And starting in September, all of the themes have been related to Art of the State. And those are saved on the Learn at Lunch part of our website. And they are, we are doing two more in gallery tours. So if you want to come see it in person and hear a tour, we are doing one on Sunday, beginning at 2 o'clock with Beth Hager and the museum director and an artist named Harold Zabady. And I am doing one with an artist named Stephen Althaus on January 2nd. So there's a lot of opportunities to see it in person on your own, do a self-guided tour, or come visit while, you know, one of the staff members is doing a tour with an artist, or to see it virtually.
So Learn at Lunch, as you mentioned, is today that you're hosting that. Is that something that that someone can go online and see?
Yes, the Learn at Lunch I'm doing today is called A Sense of Place, and it features two artists, Lauren Wording and Kelly Kautz, who did paintings that received awards that were both of interior scenes. And I thought that was really significant that both of the award winners for painting both did interiors, because we've all spent a lot of time becoming very familiar with the insides of our homes over the past year. And that begins at 12:15. And you can sign up for Learn at Lunches at statemuseumofpa.org/learnatlunch. And the past ones that we've done too have included themes including Asian American identities, overcoming physical challenges while creating. And we did one also about artists reflecting on COVID, and they're all available on YouTube.
Well, it sounds great. Curator Amy Hammond of Art of the State at the State Museum of Pennsylvania. Amy Hammond, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Blessed babe was born and laid within a manger upon this blessed morn. The witch's mother Mary did nothing take in scorn. Old tidings of
coming. What you're hearing is God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen from the central Pennsylvania based bluegrass group Colebrook Road. It's off the Joy to the Berg album for 2021. Joy to the Berg is becoming a holiday tradition itself. The project includes an album of local musicians performing holiday favorites in music styles that include rock, bluegrass, choral, and brass. Joy to the Berg will have a TV special on December 9th and performance showcase at the Englewood Restaurant in Hershey December 12th. Proceeds go toward programs for homeless people. Joining us, Joy to the Berg founder Sheldon Jones and Steve Schwartz, director of development for Christian Churches United of the Tri-County area. They're with us today. Welcome to the program. Sheldon Jones, you founded Joy to the Berg. This is not an old holiday project. In fact, this is your third year, but you did do it during the pandemic last year. How did Joy to the Berg come to be?
Well, thanks for having us on. I moved to the area probably 4 years ago, and I was interested in getting involved with the community and also getting involved with the music community in Harrisburg. So I started talking to some people, meeting folks, and came up with the idea of getting all the a group of musicians together, with each of them recording a Christmas song and then putting it on an album and selling that album to donate the proceeds to the homeless. And I should say that I also noticed when we moved to Harrisburg that I noticed that Harrisburg seemed to have, for a town of its size, an abnormally high number of homeless people on the street. So I was interested in doing something that would help that. So I was connected with Christian Churches United by a pastor friend, and it just sort of exploded from there.
So what came first, noticing that Harrisburg, for a city its size, had a lot of homeless people, or was it your motivation when you first came to Harrisburg saying, listen, I want to get involved in the community and I want to do it through music? What came first, or was it kind of at the same time?
Well, it probably, truth be known, was more selfish on my part to meet people and to get involved. The charitable aspect of it probably came a bit later. I was more concerned with getting it organized and getting things up and running at first. But I really launched the program after I met Shay Quinn and Greg Platzer, who was with Grumpy, and put the idea out to them and tested the waters on how the music musicians might accept that. And they became, a little bit to my surprise, very excited about it and were very helpful in getting it off the ground.
Why do you say you were surprised?
Well, I didn't know them, actually. And I didn't know how the concept of some new guy to town talking you into going into a recording studio and recording a Christmas song and having that end up on an album to help the homeless. I didn't know how that was going to go over, but I was pleasantly surprised, I should have said.
So, you know, one of the things that I imagine it's helpful that you were able to meet with a couple people that are very in touch with the Central Pennsylvania music scene. But I also imagine that it was a bit of a challenge pulling everyone together, because this isn't just, like, as I mentioned, just one genre. I mean, you're talking about all types of music, including, and we're going to hear them in just a few minutes, the Cumberland Valley High School Orchestra and Choir, you know, along with Shay Quinn, and along with Colebrook Road, along with brass bands. I mean, how did you pull all these people together?
Well, I think the success of the program and the beauty of it is the variety in the genres and the diversity of the different groups. I will say, though, when asking how to pull it together, it was like herding cats. it's the one part that drives me crazy is, you know, there are some of the musicians are on a different time schedule than the rest of the world. And we were trying to get people into studios to record on time and do all this. It has been a challenge, but it's one that I, for some very strange reason, I've sort of enjoyed.
So how would you describe the music on this album?
Heartfelt. It is everyone, every group, every individual that I've talked to that is on the album is truly excited about helping the homelessness situation. And they were also, of course, happy to participate. It's been a successful program in the community, and a lot of bands have benefited, I would suppose, from that success. But everybody, at no point did we have anyone forget that we were doing this for the homelessness. I was very happy about that.
When you say they didn't forget, so that seems like it became a priority. In what ways did that manifest itself? I mean, obviously, when you have musicians going into the studio, they want to make sure that the product that they're putting out, that it sounds great. It sounds the best that it can. But in what way did you see, you observe, that all these musicians that were gathering to record, that at the top of their mind, that they knew that this was a project that would benefit homeless people?
I think the best example is that no one ever asked me about being paid. And I never said this is going to be free. I mean, you're doing this for free. It was a given from the start, and it was never discussed. And this is not a something very simple. A lot of these people wrote songs for the album, wrote Christmas songs. We have several on the album that are original. They wrote songs. They took time from their schedule to go into the studio. And I should point out that we had studios give time to do the recording. We've had a lot of people want to be involved in this, but the musicians were on board from day one.
You know, it's great to hear that the community, different aspects of the community coming together for a cause like this. I kind of wish that it was something that we could see all year round, but especially at this time of year, you do have a lot of people in the community coming together for, a cause like this. I want to listen to a couple clips from the album as well. Go ahead, Joe.
Noche de paz. Noche de amor.
Noche de
amor.
Now, I chose those two. Now, Steve Schwartz sent those to me, those two clips from the album. But Shay Quinn and the Cumberland Valley Orchestra and Choir. Now, that shows how much variety and diversity there is on this album, just those two cuts. Right, Shelton?
Right. And Shay was singing Silent Night in Spanish. Who knew that was going to
happen? Yeah.
So it does the diversity and the number of people. I at some point counted up the number of individuals. We have over 150 musicians playing on this album.
Mm. Steve Schwartz, you're the Director of Development for Christian Churches United of the Tri-County Area. What's Christian Churches United role in all of this?
Well, I mean, we're the beneficiaries of Sheldon's ingenuity and the tremendous talents of all these artists. Sheldon came to us with the idea about 3 years ago. And I got really excited about it because I'm a music lover and I also love Christmas music. And so it has just been a blast to be a part of this project. But that first year, we learned that the only women's winter walk-in shelter in Harrisburg was closing. Now, there's a network of shelters in Harrisburg. We all work very closely together in the homeless community through the Capillary Coalition on Homelessness. But we try to open a few extra winter shelters that are just walk-in places that you can come on a cold night. And there was only one for women, and it was closing. And so the money in 2019 from that first album really helped us at CCU say, we can take this on. And we opened a new women's shelter that winter. It actually opened the week of Christmas. And then, you know, the next year, the pandemic hit and everything was crazy. And we had to expand that shelter, add more staff to handle all the protocols. We also run a men's shelter. We had to expand that and add more protocols for the pandemic. And so the funding has really helped us do a lot to help people on the streets of Harrisburg.
So you're saying that first year, that money raised from that album, from CD, was enough or a great contributor to keeping that women's shelter open?
Yeah, well, we actually took it over and started a new one. It was, you know, largely volunteer run that first year. I mean, we had some staff, but we were able to use a lot of volunteers. The last 2 years, we've had to transition to having a lot more staff involved with all the protocols involved in cleaning and, you know, social distancing involved. So the costs have gone up a lot in the past 2 years. Yeah.
What impact did the pandemic have, Steve, on the homeless population?
Well, it's been interesting because, you know, we do a study in Harrisburg every year of homelessness through the coalition, and numbers have ebbed and flowed somewhat, but we've seen a bit of a change of more people on the street in the last year. The moratorium on evictions helped, you know, keep people into their housing, but we feel like we're looming towards a affordable housing crisis. I mean, rent in Harrisburg has increased 40% in the past 5 years, 10% in the last year alone. So it's just getting harder and harder for people at the lower end, you know, working poor families to maintain their housing as that crunch happens.
Hmm. So Sheldon, I mean, after hearing what Steve just said, I don't know. It probably provides even more motivation to do even more to try to help people who are living on the streets, people who are homeless in the Harrisburg area. You've added a couple events this year. One is a television performance, and then another at a showcase, a live showcase in Hershey. Tell us about that.
Well, on help me out here, Steve. On I think the 12th. No, that's on the 9th. One of our main media sponsor, ABC 27, is dedicating an entire hour of the Good Day PA show to Joy to the Berg, and we have made some videos of the people who are on the album performing their song. We'll talk about that. But it's the second year for them to be involved, and we're very appreciative of that. The showcase is on the 12th, and that's from Doors open at 2, but it goes from 3 to 7, and we will have 5 of the bands that are on the album performing live. That would include Colebrook Road, also Shea Quinn, No Last Call, Don Johnson, and Tony Wayne. And all of these, all of them are superb musicians, and we're very lucky to have them performing. And I should add, at the risk of being self-promoting here, I should add that tickets are on sale for that for $25. It goes, all of it goes to charity. The bands are performing for free. We've had a lot of people donate. Also, the albums are available for a $20 donation at joytotheberg.com, but also we have them at, for sale at all 9 of the Carn stores. And because it is more appropriate for grocery pricing, we have those on sale at Carn's for $12.99.
I'm going to have to pick one up. I'll tell you that. I mean, now that we've talked about it this weekend, I think in the Lamar household there will be the CD on the player. So I want to thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Today. I mean, this is a great cause. It sounds like you know, something just popped into my head, Sheldon. When was this recorded? And the reason I ask that is because I always have wondered about holiday albums, Christmas albums, if they're recorded in the summertime, for example, if the musicians can get into the holiday spirit in the middle of July.
Well, we start the recording probably the process in late spring or early summer on selecting who is on the album. And it's quite a task to set up. We have 19 tracks on here. So we have 19 songs recorded, and we have to set up 19 studios. Then it has to be mixed and mastered and sent off. So we have to have everything done. Steve, what was the date on November?
Well, early.
1 or 2?
Early October, everything has to be to the CD printing company. And we always have one or two artists that are coming in right under the wire at the last minute. We have our fingers crossed that it'll work out, but it always works out.
We always know who they're going to be. So we allow for that in our planning. But I have a song on it. I have a band called Loco Lobo. And I recorded that in August.
How did you get into the holiday? How did you get into the holiday spirit in August?
Well, pretty easy for me. I love Christmas, so I can just kind of do it.
It's hard to ask Sheldon and I because we live Christmas music all year long there.
It sounds that way. Hey, I want to thank both of you for being with us and for the work that that you're doing. Sheldon Jones, founder of Joy to the Berg, and Steve Schwartz, director of development for Christian Churches United of the Tri-County area. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Welcome back to First Friday on Smart Talk, a focus on arts and culture. I'm Scott Lamar. Christmas with the Celts comes to the Eichelberger Performing Arts Center in Hanover this Sunday, December 5th at 3 p.m. The Celts, who have been seen on PBS many times, mix lively traditional Irish music and instrumentation with American pop music and their own originals. We're joined by Celts founder Rick Blair and Eichelberger executive director David Adler. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Rick Blair, I have to tell you that just that little snippet, and I know that's from a promo, but found my myself tapping my foot here, tapping my toes as we are playing along with that. And I'm sure that there are many, many people in your audience that are doing that all the time. As I mentioned, the Kilts have been on PBS many times, and your shows are extremely popular with American audiences. Why is it that American audiences enjoy Irish music, especially Christmas music, so much?
I think there are a number of reasons. The first thing is it's such happy music, particularly in with what's going on in our country now in the world, the difficulties. I think we're all looking for a reprieve. And if you just look at Irish history, Scottish history, there was a lot of political oppression that they faced, and the music was the way that they coped with that oppression. So, yeah, and not to mention that the Irish immigrants, Scottish immigrants, it had a lot to do with the foundation of our country. So, but it doesn't matter what culture you come from. There's something that you can learn, that you can take from that, because various cultures have suffered oppression and continue to suffer through difficult times. But the music itself, it just takes you away for a while. You know, it gives you this solace, this reprieve, and to focus on important things like family. Mm. So it's a great mixture, and especially to celebrate Christmas and the message of the hope that Christmas brings to us. So.
I like that description of happy music, because your performances, they're not just a concert. It doesn't seem like it's just a concert. It feels like an event. Dancing, different instruments that typical American musicians may not use very often. So mm-hmm. when you're describing it as happy music, but mm-hmm. is it accurate to say it's an event as well?
Yeah, because a huge part of the Irish tradition is humor. And much of that is spontaneous humor. I mean, just right off the cuff. So every concert is going to be a little bit different depending on what happens. Depends on, where we are. As a matter of fact, there's a gentleman here, Patrick Darcy, who's originally from Dublin, who is our piper. He might say a few words about that, if that's okay.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great, great. Thanks for having us on. I'm great. Yeah, looking forward to playing these shows, It's great to be out playing in front of people again.
Well, talk about, obviously, and I'm going to talk to Rick about him being an American, but Patrick, you're from Dublin. Mm-hmm. American audiences, yeah. What difference do you see in American audiences when, they hear you on the pipes for one thing, which is one mm-hmm. of the most popular parts of the show? What do you see from American audiences?
Oh, just the participation and just the wanting to celebrate and wanting to have a good time, and wanting to be out having fun with their families this time of year. It's just wonderful to see people, celebrating in that way. And it's just great to be able to introduce people to the pipes as well, because not everybody knows about the instrument. So they're and constantly sort of evangelizing for the Uilleann pipes, if you like, sort of telling people about the instrument, because they're not the usual bagpipe that everyone's
right,
familiar with.
Right, right. Well, tell us about it. I mean, evangelizing, that's a great word to describe what you want to tell right. people. So evangelize, yeah. if you will.
Yeah, yeah. So they're a bellows-blown bagpipe, so that I have a bellows under my right arm and a bag that fills a bag under my left arm. And then you have to play them sitting down. So they're an indoor version of the bagpipes, if you like. But they have three drones and three harmony pipes called regulators on top of those that you play with your wrist. And then there's the chanter, which plays all the melody, and you hold that in both your hands and your fingers. And that gets two full octaves range on a good day. But so there's seven reeds in them all together. And they're a temperamental instrument, but they're a very gratifying instrument to play. I can look back over my time learning them. You know, I've been playing them over 20 years at this point. But they each hurdle like that you cross is a fond memory kind of thing. They're not like learning the piano or accordion or something. It's not like the note is there when you go to play it. You have to learn how to play each note properly. You know, there may be people listening today that know what I'm talking about. There are like it's similar in a way to a violin in that way, where you have to learn to play the note.
I had to smile when you said two octaves on a good day, but but give us an example of a Christmas music that Americans would be familiar with, where the pipes really contribute to that song.
Ooh, well, the Celts, you know, with the Christmas with the Celts, we have, what's the tune? Oh, Holy Night. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I play Joy to the World, and just a lot of the classic hymns that we'd sing or whatever. And usually I'd play the melodies on the carols, I should say. I play the melodies on the pipes, and we all play them as a group, you know, so it's a nice modern twist with traditional instruments, you know.
Well, Patrick, I want to welcome you to Central Pennsylvania this weekend. You guys are on the road right now, right?
We are, yeah.
Well, where are you right now?
We're in Easton right now on a travel stay layover kind of thing, and then we're
New Jersey
tomorrow night, and or tonight. Yeah, these things happen
when
you're on the road.
When you're on the road, it all runs together. So yeah, Patrick, thanks. If you could put Rick back
absolutely.
On the phone.
Looking forward to the Echo Burger. All okay. right. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you. Well, let me bring in David Adler, who is executive director of the Eichelberger Performing Arts Center in Hanover. David, I mean, Eichelberger, of course, brings some really talented people and acts all the time. But you have to be looking forward to Christmas with the Celts on Sunday.
We are. We're just so excited to be back. We started our season late September after being furloughed for about 18, 19 months. So we're really excited. And this is our first Christmas show of the season. One thing I want to make note of that I'm very excited about is that we have a tremendous group of sponsors and supporters here at the Eichelberger year round, and our friends members, and it allows us to provide a national touring production such as this at a very reasonable price. Our tickets start at $30, and I'm very excited about that because I really didn't want price to be a barrier from anyone coming out and seeing this holiday show.
I have to admit that when I saw the tickets were starting at $30, I thought to myself that that is a very reasonable price to see a nationally recognized act like the Celts. And so what have ticket sales been like? I mean, are people excited?
They've been strong. We're at about 85% sold. So we got 2 days to go. So there's still some great seats. It's a small theater. We have about 500 seats in the orchestra and 200 seats in the balcony. So really, you can sit anywhere in the theater. You have a great experience, great sound, great visual lighting. We really welcome everybody.
Well, I always like the small settings because it's very intimate for the audience with the performers as well. Rick Blair, obviously, when we heard you and then we heard Patrick, you're an American, Rick. How does an American become the leader of an Irish band or show? How did that happen?
Yeah, I've been asked that a number of times. Like many Americans, my mother comes from an Irish family from north of Ireland, and my father from a Scottish family, but many generations ago. I was studying jazz at the Conservatory of Music in Cincinnati. A friend of mine had asked me to, he said, hey, there's an Irish band playing downtown. Would you like to hear them? I was like, well, I've never heard an Irish band before. You know, I didn't grow up with the music. So I went down, we opened up the door of this pub, and people were literally standing and dancing on the tables, you know, in good Irish fashion. and then I saw these ancient instruments, you know, the Uilleann pipes, you know, the Irish whistle, the barin, the bouzouki, and of course the fiddle. And it was just a really organic kind of music for the people is how I can describe it. But when I first heard those pipes, there was something in my blood. You know, I don't know if it was, you know, cell memory, but something happened to me, and I just looked at those guys and I said, I want to do that. And you know, from there on, you know, it just went from there.
Do you ever find yourself falling into an Irish accent?
Oh, you start hanging around Patrick Kerr and you start telling the jokes, and it just kind of comes through before you know it.
So you've had some time. You've had some time to work on that. How do
yes,
you?
Go ahead. There's the problem, though. He ends up sounding like he's from India or something.
Right. So, chicken Punjabi.
So, Rick, how do you combine Irish and Scotch music with traditional American music?
Well, we've combined, you know, some of the songs that everyone knows with instrumentation of, you know, Uilleann pipes and Irish whistle and fiddle. But we also introduce some modern instruments like drum loops and synthesizer and to create this hybrid. So some of the songs are going to be songs that people know, and then some of them are going to be brand new. But I think they'll like it, if I can say that. Mm. It's again just really happy, joyful music. And you can't listen to it without tapping your feet, clapping your hands.
Yeah, and then the a lot of the roots of American music, you know, which going through bluegrass and old time and leading into country music and some pop, probably even like at a stretch, would have its roots in Celtic music, you know, or, you know, some of the tunes that we'd play in Irish music would cross over into old time and bluegrass music. Yeah, you know. So there is a breeding ground there, if you like, for that kind of thing. So it's fun to try and figure those things out too and sort of remind people of all that, you know, it's all the things we have in common.
Well, yeah, Oops, okay, it looks like we lost Rick there for just a second. So I want to go back to David Adler for just a moment. I'm hoping we can get Rick back on. We only have about a minute or so left in the program. But, David, I have to think that after just listening to our conversation here this morning, that to have to be even more excited for Christmas with the Celts on Sunday.
We are so excited. We've had them here about 2 years ago, and it's such an energetic show, and they are true entertainers. And I think that's where they really shine. It's not standing on a stage playing music. They're truly entertaining you. And what he said about every show is different, it's absolutely true. The audience is engaged. It's a two-way feeling, and everyone just walks away feeling really good.
Well, that's when, you know, Rick described it as happy music. As I said, that just sounds like such a great description, and it is an event. So, yeah, I think that the audience will just love it. Christmas with the Celts at the Eichelberger Performing Arts Center in Hanover, Sunday, December 5th at 3 p.m. And I'll ask the question, David, how can people who are listening, how can they get any tickets?
Of course. Our box office is open Monday through Friday, 10 to 2, 717-637-7086. Or you can reach us on a website. It's the Ike, theeich.org.
David Adler, thank you very much. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great weekend.